You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wood.
And I'm Jennifer Connor.
From Equestrian Businesswomen, and you are listening to Equestrian B2B, the podcast that brings together industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and equestrians for conversations about how they build and sustain a successful business.
On today's show, we speak with April Scheel about building her business, her Why I Want to Quit journal, and more of her Muckmeister Enterprises.
April Scheel is the creator of The Bedding Blocker, an innovative stall management solution used by barns across the country. A lifelong horsewoman and problem solver, April designed The Bedding Blocker to reduce bedding waste, cut down on cleanup time, and make daily barn life more efficient. She's passionate about creating practical barn-tested products that make life easier for both horses and the people who care for them. We also have another bio from April herself, which we will share.
Picture it. My boarding business, circa 2017. I'm knee-deep in the chaos of managing my barn, watching my oh-so-graceful equine companions walk in and out of their stalls as they pleased. Not a care in the world. Bedding was flying out of the stalls like confetti at a party, and my wallet was shedding tears over the wasted money. Shout out to the 90s kids like me who wore their wallets with chains. In a stroke of genius, I drilled a push broom head into the stall threshold. It was at that moment I decided I would never be a contractor. It worked, kind of. The broom didn't hold up and turned into an eyesore faster than any piece of art I created as a child. Time for plan B, or should I say plan, hey, let's not make a mess. Surprisingly, my quest for a commercial solution led me down an empty stable, no products in sight. That's when I put on my entrepreneur hat and created Muckmeister Enterprises LLC. Some say I should have used an entrepreneur helmet. Hindsight is 2020. Cue the dramatic montage, countless prototypes, COVID curveballs, supply hiccups, and one determined individual later, I created the Bedding Blocker. The world's first defense against runaway bedding and a stylish addition to any stall. Muckmeister HQ, my converted horse barn in Southeast Pennsylvania. I said nay to the horse boarding business, making room for the Bedding Blocker. From customer service to labeling to shipping, I do it all with the finesse of a horse avoiding a puddle, unless it's my horse. He likes to toddler jump in them. Weirdo. I digress.
And when I'm not chasing around wild ideas or running Muckmeister, you can find me in an ambulance or in the hospital. Plot twist much? I'm not sick or injured. The helmet helped. I've been a paramedic for 20 years and recently decided to use my nursing degree for an inpatient hospital gig. Let's not forget my furry friends, Atlas, Tess, and the retired jumping champion turned luxury trail companion, Duncan, my 18-year-old Arab gelding. He looks like a Dunkin' Macchiato with his big old white legs and face. I've also compared him to a pumpkin roll when he's laying down. Sometimes he thinks he's on fire and he really likes to prance, but that's the Arab coming out. I'd like to think I'm just an average gal who likes to help people in one way or another. I also drink too much coffee and stir up shenanigans in my spare time.
Hi friends, Connor here. I wanted to take a quick minute to tell you about my new endeavor. My partner Chelsea and I have developed the first peer-to-peer equestrian clothing rental marketplace. Think Airbnb for those unused clothes sitting in your closet. It's simple. You're going to rent, ride, and return. We're excited to connect equestrian closets across the country, helping to make equestrian fashion more affordable, accessible, and sustainable. So start cleaning out those closets and make some extra horse money. Check out ridersrent.com. We're so happy to welcome April Scheel to the show today. She's somebody who we've been going back and forth for a while, trying to find a good time to connect. She has a pretty cool product that she invented, and I am super excited to have you today, April.
Thank you. I'm so excited to finally be here.
So let's just get started kind of talking about your background in the equine industry and what's led you to this product.
So Back when I was 9, out of spite to my mother, I wrote a letter to a local barn down the street. Every weekend, I go to my dad's and I pass this barn, and they have these like highfalutin horses out there, tails high. I learned later those were Arabians, hence my obsession with Arabs to this day. So I wrote them a letter, like a Dear John letter, which back in the early 90s, like you couldn't just DM them. You had to actually write it and put a stamp on it and send it down. I really wasn't expecting anything to come of it, but they wrote me back. And every weekend I'd go down there and I'd clean stalls and I would brush the horses. I learned that I was allergic to horses right around that time. So that was a lot of fun. But that really started my equestrian industry situation. I've never been professional. I've never shown like a circuit, the super fancy jumpers. I just know I like to be around horses. And, you know, eventually I started riding. So that's really was the start of it. And, you know, back when you're 9, you do what grownups tell you to do. So when I was cleaning stalls, I was constantly like sweeping bedding back into the stalls. And like this barn was spotless. They were so obsessive about keeping these aisles clean. And I just remember like getting just hating to sweep at the end. I just wanted to get home. But that really like that started my obsession. Like I did stall cleaning and the dirty work before I ever started riding, which I think gave me more of an appreciation for how things should be done and how things shouldn't be done. So fast forward about 20 years, I started renting out barns and developed my business, Muckmeister Farm, LLC. Mm-hmm. Rented out barns, had boarders, started cleaning stalls myself again, started paying for everything, which was insane. And that was one of my pain points, was watching these horses drag bedding out of the stalls. But I'm probably getting ahead of myself in your questions, but that's how I started the equine industry.
You know, it's really funny. I grew up in a horse family. So like right away, my mom's obsessive about bedding, obsessive. Like mm-hmm. She monitors all of the grooms, how much they're using, how much the horses are using, where the horses are going to the bathroom in the stall, like the whole deal. And I always got the job, the Hunter Jumper Barn that I was riding at, of sweeping because I was such a good sweeper because my mother, I mean, from the time I was in the barn, we had to sweep. So she was like, taught us how to sweep. And they're like, you know, kids these days don't know how to sweep that good. They're like, Jen, you're great at it. You should do it. I'm like, oh, ah, thanks. Awesome. So fun.
Just yeah, what that's you want to do. Yeah.
When you're good at something, you're expected to do it more. So I tried to be really bad at it. I still had to do it. It was, right? Yeah.
Totally get it. So, you know, you have this product that you developed. Where did your idea come from? Like, when was the light bulb moment for this? And when did you kind of start on the path of developing the product called the bedding blocker?
Back in 2016, my husband and I bought 14 acres here in little old Zionsville, Pennsylvania. And we put in a 4-stall barn, which I had boarders for. I should just recently stop boarding because the business has gotten so big, I needed the space. But I would watch my super graceful Arabian drag bedding out of the stall. And it was almost like he'd look back at me and like flip me the bird, like, haha, there's more money. Yeah. Like it was, my horses can go in and out as they please. So my whole developing theory of this was the paddocks. Mm-hmm. They would go in and out of the paddocks and I'd have this ginormous muddy mess. And all you'd see is money being spilled out. You really can't put muddy bedding back in a stall. At least I didn't. So I wanted a way to stop the bedding from going out of the stall. Seems logical. So I asked my dear husband, who had a hammer drill, to put a upside down push broom head into the thresholds of the stalls. Beautiful. It worked for like 2 months. Then they started chewing them. The bristles didn't last. It looked like crap. Tore them out. I said, well, the heck with it. Obviously, I can't do anything because I didn't want to put a board across it because my horse, again, not graceful. And he would have his legs all butchered up and scarred. So I let it go for a while. Fast forward maybe about a year, my friend Barb, who actually helped me get this property, she came up to visit from Virginia. And I think I still had a push broom. I did. I actually just replaced another push broom head in only one of the stalls to see how long it would last. And she looked at me, she goes, what's that? I'm like, it's a push broom, Barb. The broom, you push it, but it's upside down in my stall. She goes, well, it's stopping the bedding from going out. Yeah, that's the idea. Because there has to be like a better product. There has to be a commercial product available for this. I said, okay, well, let's look. So like the entire day we're Googling, you know, this is before like AI and ChatGPT. We're looking on Pinterest, we're going everywhere. And there wasn't anything like it. So that was my aha moment. Let me just backtrack for a minute. I'm a nurse. I'm a paramedic. I have absolutely no business being an inventor. I have the creativity of a gnat. Like, don't ask me to do anything art-wise. So to tell me, you know what, you should invent something that's like a push broom, but better. Like, I have no idea where to start. So Barb kind of, I hope she listens to this. Barb helped me along the way and encouraged me to find somebody, find anything that could help me develop this product. So I went on Facebook, put like a generic, hey, does anyone work with prototypes, entrepreneurs, inventors? I have no idea what I'm doing. Please help me. And sure enough, I had a friend whose son-in-law actually worked with entrepreneurs and developing prototypes like 15 minutes from me.
Wow.
Shout out to Matt. Thank you for your help in this. So that was the start of our many, many prototypes, which I can't wait to get into.
Well, speaking of, what was the biggest challenge in turning it from an idea into an actual product? And how many prototypes did you have?
Oh, the biggest problem is patience. I am the least patient person on the planet. I want instant gratification. Like, this is my idea. Let's start it today. Let's sell it by Friday. And let's retire by, you know, age 45. Yeah. So when you tell me I have to develop a prototype, cool. I actually went into this board meeting with Matt and his company and had to present my idea. They don't take on every entrepreneur that approaches them. So I was incredibly honored and really in shock that they took this project on because it seems so simple. But it took a lot of prototypes. We had, at last count, we had 7, maybe 8 prototypes because we were looking at both the bases, which are now PVC. We had those aluminum for a while. The bristle height was anywhere from 2 to 8 inches. Like, we were trying to experiment with, is it a trip hazard? Will it be effective? What kind of bristles are we to use? And we ended up using the nylon. So the patience through that whole process was a very trying time for me because I would wonder, like, why is it taking a week to hear back from this manufacturer? Why aren't I getting my samples in? Holy crap, why is it costing 4 times what I thought it would cost? Yeah. So yeah, patience. I really learned a lot of patience during this. And COVID, which happened right as I was developing, tested it even farther, like to the point where I almost gave up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's hard enough to get a business off the ground, much less in a pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
It makes everything so much longer, so much slower, the whole process. So patience, yeah, that can be tested.
For sure.
And even like the, you know, the manufacturers that you're working with, it may not even be them. It's the suppliers that they're, you know, that supply chain was so messed up and so long. Like, they couldn't get, you know, the supplies to make your product.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I work for a manufacturer of pharmaceuticals, and we still have supply issues coming in, you know, things on the water, things that are being held up because of back orders that happened 5 years ago.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's still happening. It's, you know, and then everything shut down. So you didn't even have the employees that they weren't able to go into, you know, into their building and actually do the work. So it really slowed everything down. Yeah.
How long did you test your prototypes? Like, you know, you'd get one in. How long would you give it before you decided that it wasn't exactly what you wanted?
So I still have my original one in my horse's stall, my very first one. Why? Because I can't take it out. My very first prototype, I don't remember exactly how we did this, but we had it all in one piece and we drilled it so hard into the concrete, we can't get it out. So this brush has been there for like 7 years. Is it still effective? Sure. Not as well as the new ones are, but it's still there. I really should try to get that out because it really should be replaced. My horse I have now is equally not graceful, but I just whatever. I need to replace that one.
It should be in a museum.
It really should. It's like an artifact. Every once in a while, I post it on my socials like, no, really, this is the one from 7 years ago. It's still functional. It's still there. But as far as like the other ones, I had 4 stalls to work with on my own. And I would say I left them in like 4 to 5 months at most. Oh. Because when we were developing the actual size for it, like no one wants to step over an 8-inch long bristle, you know, so we nixed that right away. We had the aluminum bases for a while, and there was some concern over like aluminum horseshoes and aluminum bases and sparks, which was really unfounded, but we nixed that idea as well. So 4 or 5 months for each prototype, give or take, that we put in the stalls.
Okay. That's longer than I thought it would be. So yeah. I guess that tests your patience as well.
Patience.
Yeah. Yeah. And so do the prototypes differ a lot from your final product?
The one thing that's been consistent was the material of the bristles.
Okay.
That's been nylon since day one. It really was a matter of how much we put into the aluminum extrusion, how we were actually designing it. But that was really the biggest one was the height, I should say. The height and how we actually attached them into the thresholds. That was the biggest change. Other than that, the bristles have stayed the same. And I kind of shot myself in the foot with the bristles because they last so long. I sell replacement brushes on the website, but I don't sell a lot because they last a really long time. So
yeah.
Well, hence the one that's in my barn for 7 years. Still right. Effective.
Good and bad thing to have.
Did you have other people test the prototypes?
I would love to say, yeah, hundreds. No. I, for whatever reason, and hindsight's 2020, I did not do as much market research as I should have. I don't know why. I guess because I'm just very independent. I'm like, listen, I have all these horses. I can do it myself. I wish I would have tested the market a little better, but I don't have a lot of friends in the equine community. You know, most of my friends are not horse people. So I really didn't have a whole lot of room to test it on. And my theory was, you know what? I have this pain point. This is a big problem for me. Well, clearly it's a problem for everybody in the horse world. So why do I need to even ask for opinions? I know what I'm doing. Hmm. Yeah, I would have changed that looking back. And it worked out for it worked out okay in the end, but I definitely would have done more, you know, hands-on market research, sending out product and actually getting opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes opinions clutter you also, you know, like you can get too much feedback sometimes and that stalls progress as well.
Yes. Yes. Especially everything to heart. Like, of course, right. I'm going to get people, well, that's stupid. Cool. Yeah. Well, you know, 5,000 other customers don't think it is. So
beyond your really helpful.
Exactly.
I just want to take 1 second to backtrack. So you run a boarding facility, but you don't train or anything like that. You just run a boarding facility? Am I understanding?
I did run a boarding facility for years. I actually was renting barns for, my gosh, since I was in my mid-20s, which was 5 years ago, right? But 3.5 years ago, I made a really tough decision to stop boarding. I had 6 horses at the time. I had fantastic boarders, but I didn't want to. I didn't want to do it anymore. And I was putting so much effort into my betting blocker and Muckmeister Enterprises, which is my parent company, into that product. I didn't have the time for it. And I felt like I wasn't giving them enough attention because I was so focused on this. I also need a space. Like, I have 4 stalls in my pole barn. I sold 2 of those stall fronts, and that's now my bedding blocker space. That's where I work out of. So I have 2 stalls, and I have my own personal horse. So I don't do boarding anymore. I do miss it sometimes, but this morning when the buckets were frozen, and, you know, it's 20 degrees out. No, don't miss it. My horse can wait another hour to eat till it gets warmer, right?
No, I find that interesting that you like had just a boarding business. You don't hear of people typically just doing that. So that's what kind of caught my attention.
Yeah. You don't make money. You don't make money in boarding horses for recreation. Like, I have a ring. I have an outdoor ring. We have trails. It's a nice property. It's quiet. But I did not train. I didn't breed. I didn't show. Like, my guys were, hey, let's hop on a trail. You know, and I've made lifelong friends with with my former boarders. But yeah, never did training.
Yeah, that's cool. And talking about your stalls that are now your better bedding blocker situation, storage, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah. Because I mean, the boxes are huge. They're 4 feet long. So it comes by freight. My extrusions and my brushes come from different companies. They're delivered via freight, and I use that whole section to store them. So my biggest fear is like running out of inventory, which because I have a lead time on one of the components, it's pretty long. So I'm like, okay, I need to have all this space. You walk in like, what the heck? This is not a barn anymore.
Mm-hmm. So what does production look like for it then? And like, are you putting the pieces together, or does it come as one?
So I have two different manufacturers. The first one is the brush component. So that's the nylon bristle. It's crimped into an aluminum base. The factory is pretty cool. They make like these long, humongous strips, and then they cut them. 48 inches is my standard product. I then get them shipped. I usually buy about 500 at a time, and they come up from Florida. So they come up in the big pallet, and then my extrusions come from Texas. I want to say San Antonio, somewhere down there. They also got freight, and then also separate boxes. So there's a two PVC bases. There's a brush. I also supply all the hardware and a drill bit. And then I put them all in the box. So customer orders 2 or 10, I box them up with the hardware, instruction manual, cute little sticker, and off they go. So that's really the whole process. And I do 90% of that myself, unless I get super busy, which I've been lately. And then I'll hire independent contractors to help me do the boxing and the shipping.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. We had somebody on a while ago, and she was literally putting her product together herself in her house. She had started in COVID as well. And yeah, she gets like all the pieces and then like puts it together. I was like, wow. So I was curious about that for you. Like,
yeah, it's since different components, I can't physically put them together because, you know, when you put them in the stall, it's the one extrusion, then the brush and the other extrusion. We had, speaking of prototypes, back to that, we experimented with doing just one piece, but it ended up being like it was called tuft, where they took like little, not that you could see my hand gestures while I'm, you know, on the podcast, but they would take like a couple sections of brush and put them in pre-drilled holes. And it literally looked like a push broom. Like, I wasn't happy with that. And it wasn't as effective because there was too many gaps in it. So we ended up doing the three component system, which you can cut all of those components, the two PVC extrusions and the brush. You can cut them to fit your threshold, and you can also line them up end to end. Like, I have people with run-in shelters that have 5 or 6 just lined up. So whereas I only sell the 48 inch long ones right now, you can very easily cut and adjust them to fit as you like.
Oh, that's I was actually going to ask that, like, is there different sizes? Because, you know, there is a standard that you want for stall, but, you know, some people have it a smaller aisle way, some have it a bigger. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you had somebody to kind of help you get through the prototype journey. What was the point where you said, okay, I'm ready to go to market? Like, what do I need to do now? Was there anyone who helped you with that?
Yes. So I had a business consultant. Actually, she was a SCORE. I don't know if you guys have SCORE in your area. It's like a small business mentoring program. I connected with a woman named Pam, who really helped guide me in going to market. But to be honest, I did things myself a lot of times. Like, I really didn't listen to all the good advice that people were giving me. Hindsight, I'm glad I did it how I wanted to do it, but also I should have listened to her a little bit more. We launched our website. I did hire someone to do my website design because I'm horrible at websites. But yeah, we launched direct to consumer. And I remember going to bed that night, you know, after the website launched, I had my social medias. I had like 0 followers because nobody knows who the heck I am. And like the next morning I got my first order. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, I'm retiring. I'm done. Like, I'm leaving healthcare. And I did not do that. But then I had an issue. Oh my gosh. I had an issue with the boxes that I ordered. I didn't tape them well enough for the first several orders. I don't know why. I was quick. I was just, and like the boxes came apart with UPS. So I learned that you have to tape the boxes a little better for these.
Oh, no.
Lessons learned early, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, yeah, you never know, though. You have no idea. When you launch a company, you just really have no idea. I launched a company earlier this year, and it's like every time we turn around, there's something else we've learned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been a learning experience for sure.
It's always evolving.
So did you have a plan then going into it, like a business plan? Did your mentor's score coach help you come up with a business plan?
Sure. Yeah, that's absolutely 100% what happened in that order. No, I did not have a well thought out business plan. My plan was, look, I don't want to work in healthcare anymore. This is a freaking cool idea. It's helping me. Let's help other people, because that's literally my life, is helping other people. And oh, these are my rough figures. This is how much it's going to cost me. So I do have a business plan. Have I looked at it in the last year? No, I have not. But I did have one, and I do stress the importance of one, but I also don't want other entrepreneurs and inventors to get so hung up on, oh my gosh, I have to have this perfectly laid out business plan for a product that I invented. I don't think it's always necessary, but consult your legal advisor for more advice on that. Mm-hmm. I do have a business plan, and I should probably relook at that now. Now that you've got
it. Here's a good reminder.
Yeah, because I was wondering, like, has it evolved, you know, from when you first said it to like now?
Yes. Yeah, it actually has. Did I write it down? No. But, you know, we're doing business to business now as well. And I might be getting ahead of myself, but we're B2B with a huge company. I'm sure you've all heard of American Stalls. America Stalls, and this kind of goes into, I had to redo my business plan just to keep myself happy and my accountants and everyone else happy. American Stalls, about 4 or 5 years ago, I met the CEO, Yash, on LinkedIn, and they have been an amazing, amazing partner for me. They make up a huge majority of my sales, but to me, that represents a pivot. I hate that word. I'm going to say it. It's a pivot. You know, I'm direct to consumer. I'm doing fairly well, given my, you know, zero marketing budget, and it's just me. But, you know, partnering with American Stalls, I had to pivot that business plan and look at, like, where am I going? You know, what my price is going to be for them? How am I going to interact with their customers and sales reps? So yeah, I did redo that business plan to fit in the B2B, and we are still seeking more B2B customers for the business.
And how did you, or did you have to adjust your manufacturing in order to keep up with that demand?
I just had to order more. You know, it sounds really simple. I mean, the lead time for the extrusions is like 3 to 4 months because of the tooling and the groove and the very specific measurements that I have on it. I did run out of inventory, I think twice, but it was only for like a week. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, we have to wait a year. So I have to constantly struggle with budgeting, having enough inventory, but not having too much that, you know, now I'm behind on my bills to pay my manufacturers. So that's something I think I'm always going to struggle with. Should I ask for more help with that? Yeah. Will I? Probably not. I'm just going to wing it. Don't wing it. No, I do have help with that. But yeah, it's just a constant balance between managing inventory is really the big thing with B2B and getting these contracts and anticipating what they're going to need, you know, and things of that nature.
And you still have a job in healthcare?
I do, but I'm no longer full-time. I left full-time about 3 years ago, which was what I, at the time, I thought was a very difficult decision. But my husband carries the healthcare. I'm fully vested in a pension. I work part-time as a nurse, as a medic. I work with who I want to work with and when I want to work. So it's nice to have that, I hate to say fall back on, but at the same time, like, listen, we all need to pay our bills. And yeah. I really do like working in healthcare. I just didn't want to do it full time anymore. So this is my Muckmeister Enterprises. That's like my full time baby right now. And I anticipate it being that way for a while. Long time. Till I retire at 35.
Well, I feel that though. Like, everybody does have to pay their bills. And so many times they're like, oh, you just have to like jump off the deep end and cut the cord and make it happen and, you know, put it all and be committed. And I'm like, I mean, I have bills to pay. I've got mouths to feed. I carry the insurance for my husband and I, so, you know, that's pretty important. And, you know, and I like my job too.
Right.
You know, I did this. I started another business and I do the equestrian businesswoman because I'm passionate about other things, but I like my job. It's not like I'm dreading it every day. So why do I give that up? And it's an advantage because it connects me with all the same people that I need to be connected with. So, I feel that even just keeping a part-time job is, it gives you some sense of relief, right? That you have that there.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Because my sales are not always going to be what they are. You know, this time of year in the Northeast, it's cold out. People don't want to be putting these in their barns, although you should, you know, when it's cold out. So it's, you're going to have those ups and downs. And for my situation, I think it was foolish for me to be like, you know what? Done. Caution to the wind. No, that puts my husband in a bad spot, puts me in a bad spot. And I like to buy nice things. So yeah, I'm definitely going to keep working in healthcare. I don't see that changing. But, you know, my hours decrease as my sales go up. I don't have to work quite as much there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's an ideal situation, you know, for where you are at this point in your life, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I'm 42. I mean, I'm 22. I'm 42. So, yeah, it gets to be a little wearing work because I only work nights as well. I only ever work nights because then I have days to do the business. When do I sleep? Sure.
Yeah.
My aunt was a nurse for years and she only worked nights and then she would come home and deal with her children until they went to school and then she took a nap and then she dealt with them before she went to work and she did that for years and years and years.
I don't have kids, so that's always nice too. I don't have to worry about, I don't think I have kids. No, I don't. I don't have to worry about them. So it's really just me and keeping me and my husband alive and that's all I got to.
So what's something that you've learned from starting the business? I mean, we talked about patients in the prototype situation, but once, you know, things are running and getting going, is, you know, what are some other things that you've had to, you know, educate yourself on?
Networking. I am horrible at networking, which you would think would be the opposite because I love talking to people. I just didn't, and I continue to not make time to network, like doing podcasts like this, going on my social medias, going live, going to events. I'm learning that I really have to do that. And I think what a lot of folks that, you know, are selling product, they think networking is, I got to sell my product. It's not always about that. I'll talk to you about anything, you know, and if my product intertwines with it, great. You know, I'll mention it, but I feel like when I network a lot of times, I'm trying to sell my, I feel like I should be trying to sell my product more. I don't know if I'm phrasing that right. Whereas I really just want to get out and meet people. And what are your pain points? What do you like about, you know, the barn showing this and that? Oh, by the way, I have a product that could help you, you know, with this pain point. So I really learned I need to network more. I need to put myself out there more. I need to stay on top of my social media more because God, I'm horrible at that. I took over that about a year ago because, you know, it's me. I want to, you know, not pay somebody else to do it. And I've learned that the more I keep up with my socials, the more people I meet. And it's just it's a beautiful circle. It is so wonderful to connect with people like me and even like big time show people. You know, I've never been in that environment. And sometimes I feel like I don't belong in that environment because I don't have a world-class jumper. But we all have to clean stalls. We all have to be in the barn, whether you pay a groom or you have a barn manager, you're still involved somehow with it. And that to me is where that's my niche. That's where I need to connect more with people.
I think what is beautiful about your product is that, you know, it spans across any discipline, any type of saddle that you ride in, you know, no matter, unlike, you know, it doesn't even have to be horses. It could be whatever type of llama, alpaca, donkey you have in a stall, right? So if you have the need, it can be used. anywhere. And well,
a lot of scalability to a product like this. Yeah.
I'm looking at chicken coops right now.
Oh, interesting.
Chicken coops. Yeah. I have a couple friends with chickens. I'm also looking at using them in horse trailers, not only as a visual for the horse, but you know, you back your horse out of your trailer, you're dragging bedding out. Mm. So right now it's a matter of how do I attach it, because most of them are aluminum. So I do have someone come over to work on that, trying to market it as that as well. It's so versatile. You know, it's such a simple idea, but you can actually, our first video, our first commercial had alpaca, I had a pig, I had a goat. I had all these little critters like in and out of my barn. My dogs were like, what the hell's going on? Like, we're being like Dr. Doolittle over here, you know. that little pig, his name was Chip, is now like huge. You know, he was one of my stars in the first commercial I did.
That's awesome.
I have a question. Are they movable? Like, if you put it in the barn and you leave that barn, can you take it with you?
Yes.
Like for a single owner who might wanna, you know, save it, or they have dry stalls, like they can move it.
Yes, absolutely. And not the one that I have in my stall from 7 years ago. Can't move that. But the whole beauty of this is you can very simply take the hardware out and move everything, which is, you know, also why I recommend replacing the brush when it starts to, you know, lose its effectiveness. You can very easily take it out and just put a new brush in, or take it with you where you go. You might need new hardware, you know, the anchors for it. I mean, I sell those as well. You can get those at any hardware store. But yeah, it is easy to move and clean and adjust. Yeah, super simple.
So obviously networking is really important to us at Equestrian Businesswomen. It's essentially what we do and what we promote. So it's great to hear that that's something, you know, that you learned and are working on. Is there other advice that you would give to someone thinking about starting a business in the equine industry?
You're going to have people that are going to tell you it's a dumb idea. It's already been done. That service is already existing. I'll tell you a quick story. It's never quick with me, but one of my early on consultants that I was actually working on the ambulance with, I won't say the gentleman's name because he is still a friend, but I remember he came over, looked at that first or second prototype. And he's also an inventor, by the way, and an entrepreneur. He looked at me and goes, I can see you like going to horse shows and selling these out of the back of your car. But I wouldn't dream much bigger than that. And I went, okay. Thank you for your advice. Also, bye. Prove you wrong. I have not once taken product to a horse show and sold them. Not once. It's all, I mean, I've gone to like trade shows and smaller seminars, but like that was never my goal. Mm-hmm. My goal was e-commerce, you know, networking now, as I've learned. But to hear him say that, to hear someone who I respected so much tell me that it's dumb, basically, and good luck, and I wouldn't pay more than $20 for it. Okay, well, and I know he sees me now, and he likes all my statuses and follows me, and like, I almost want to thank him, because, you know, without that fuel to really push forward, I don't know if I would be continuing this, because there were many, many times when I wanted to quit. Mm-hmm. And the original question is, what advice would I give? When you want to quit, when you want to stop, write it down. Write down exactly why. Have a journal. Why do I want to quit right now today? Is it because I haven't eaten? Silly as it sounds, and I'm hangry, I have some really negative thoughts. Am I caffeinated? You know, am I thinking clearly? And why? Am I just having a bad day? Did I get a bad phone call? Did I stub my toe? Was my horse being a jerk? You know, why exactly do you want to quit? Write it down, let it sit. And the next day, go back to a list and be like, well, that was dumb. I just wanted a sandwich. Oh, my horse was having a bad day. And I do this. I have a whole practice doing this at night. People have gratitude journals. I have, why do I want to freaking quit journal and talk myself out of it? That's my best advice I could give to someone trying to start a business.
I love that.
I love that too. I do, because I mean, I'm fresh into this business that we started, and like there are days where I'm like, oh man, I'd have way more money if I didn't keep putting it into this. Is this really worth it? Like, we haven't seen a lot of
we've seen a lot of success in that people have liked the page or signed up on the website. But in terms of like actual transactions happening, that hasn't happened yet. And I know it's going to, but every once in a while, I'm like, oh man. And it's funny because I have a business partner in it. And so when I'm like having a freak out and I'm like, I don't know, is this worth it? Like, what are we doing wrong? She's the one who's like, no, we're fine. And then when she's having freakouts and she's like, oh my God, these developers are making me crazy, or, you know, this is happening or whatever. And I'm like, it's just going to take time. It's going to happen, but we just have to keep plugging away, like keep going, you know. But I like that idea of writing it down. And, you know, sometimes it is because I didn't have enough caffeine or something happened in another part of my world where I'm like, oh man, like I didn't make as many sales as I thought I was going to on my, you know, in my pharma job or whatever. And it has nothing to do with the actual business. Like, I like it. So that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's, and also another idea, another suggestion is take a walk. This sounds so trivial. When I'm frustrated or I don't know where to start or I want to quit, I take a flipping walk. I was out 25 degrees out this morning. I went for my hour walk, listened to some podcasts. I'm starting to get into podcasts more, yours included. And I've figured out so many things internally when I just take a walk.
Yeah.
I could solve the world's problems by taking a walk and then eating a sandwich so I'm not hangry. That's what I do.
You know, during COVID, I took a lot of walks. Like, I walked a lot. That was like my thing, was like to walk, because it just gave me clarity almost, you know, like just get it off. Don't sit in the house and, you know, lock myself down and be sad about things. Like, I was able to like walk and feel good about it. And then, you know what? I lost a bunch of weight and I felt great. And, you know, it turned out to be great. So, you know, I think that's good advice as well. Are you completely self-funded?
Yes. Well, I know I did borrow money from my dad early on. I paid him back very quickly. I do not have any investors right now. I'm pretty well established, but yeah, for the most part, self-funded. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I have a business loan through a nonprofit, which a lot of business owners have, but I didn't do a Kickstart because I didn't know that was a thing. Then, probably would have helped, but I didn't do it. But yeah, self-funded, self-motivated. I am a little bragging right here. I am 100% woman-owned. I'm certified through WBENC. So woman-owned business. I have that cool little logo.
That's awesome. But yeah,
I just am bootstrapping.
Hey, you know what? My finance guys, they keep telling me, just keep bootstrapping. Most of the finance guys that I have talked to have been like, Jen, don't take on investors. Don't do a raise. Don't do the capital. Keep it to yourself. Like, you don't need anybody in there messing around with it. Just keep bootstrapping. If you can bootstrap. So that's what I've been doing. Has your business, how long has it been profitable for?
So of course, profits, I think of financially. And there are months where I'm more profitable than others. But my other sense of accomplishment and profit is how much I'm helping people. How many compliments I get, and oh my gosh, this is great. Why didn't we think of this sooner? Why aren't you everywhere? So yeah, of course, the idea is to make money, and I am making money, but I really thrive on helping people do better in whatever they're doing. And if I can save you time so you can ride your horse more or groom him more, that to me is part of the whole profit. It's the whole grand scheme of things. So yeah, it's profit is a very broad term. But yeah, we are profitable. I've been probably about only really in the last year or so, to be honest with you. You know, they say it takes about 10 years for a business to really become profitable, something I didn't want to hear. But now I'm almost 7 years into it, and I'm just starting to turn that corner. Most of my marketing is organic. I run very few ads. Like, I might sponsor a post. I'm going to be looking in. I know you had Piper from Plaid Horse. I'll be advertising with her again. You know, there's a couple other well-known people and organizations that I will start running ads, but I don't have that kind of budget. You know, this is me, myself, and I doing it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, profits are good, but it's more than just the money in my mind.
Yeah, for sure. If I can just jump back to the journal idea and when you were writing down, you know, why you wanted to quit or what was really, you know, what causes you to want to quit, I think. Have you gone back like over the months and seen, oh, you know what? Like 7 or 8 times I wrote the same thing that was bothering me or why I wanted to quit and tried to find a solution or realized like, oh, this really is a problem and I should do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My main problem was I'm not getting direct to consumer sales. I'm not getting, gosh darn it, no one's visiting my website. Well, yeah, because I'm not posting and I'm not sharing. I'm not emailing. I'm not connecting. A lot of it came down to, am I connecting? Am I getting my point across?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time I wasn't. So I put a more serious effort into scheduling my social media posts, scheduling time to get on my pages and comment back, you know, to people that are interacting, thanking them for buying my product. So a lot of it really was, it all came back to me because I run the show. You know, I can blame all sorts of outside sources, but it's ultimately me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm actually looking at the binder now. It says world dominating ideas on the front of it. And I've had this notebook. I still have notes in here from when I was building this house. That's, I have awesome sections. Like that is like, I'm going to be buried with that notebook when I'm 107. Yeah, there's some consistencies and there's some things that are out of my control, i.e. COVID, you know, lack of supplies, supply chain demands, delays and that. But a lot of it was in my control.
I love that because I think so many people don't think things are within their control. And if they saw repeatedly something like that, like, you know, just having to do more social media, they could say, okay, I need to do this, or okay, I'm at a point where I need to hire someone to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it could really set people's expectations and have, you know, make more realizations about their business rather than just saying, oh, throw your hands up, this isn't working.
Right.
So a little more, we kind of talk about self-awareness a lot as business owners and, you know, being aware of what you're good at and what you're not good at and the point where you should ask for outside help on things, whether that's temporarily for something to fix or long-term someone to add to your team. So yeah, I think that kind of journal is, I've never heard anyone say something like that. So I just love that idea.
Yeah. Because like I do a gratitude journal, right? And I go back through there and there have been things that have happened that I'm like, oh my God, it did. It finally happened. Like I wrote this a couple of years ago and it has happened. But I would love to keep track of those days that I want to quit and what is it and how can I change it? And, you know, also to your point about doing things yourself, you may want to be able to have somebody come and do it. But if you don't have the means to get that done, at least you can say, you know what, this is something that I have to learn to do. And, you know, this is the problem and I have to learn to do this and make a point to learn it. And that's fine. I will until I can afford to bring somebody else on.
Exactly. And I did that early on. I had a fantastic social media marketing manager. The only reason I cut ties with her is because I needed to do it myself. It was nothing to do with her. You know, financially, I needed to take over. I enjoy doing it. But for the love of God, if anybody knows how to do TikTok, please enlighten me. Because it's like... everyone's like, oh, just do CapCut and do these reels. I'm like, I do reels and I accidentally posted a live video of like my nose hairs. Like I don't, that's something in my journal. I suck at TikTok. I should give up.
No, don't.
Just do TikTok. Just stop doing TikTok for a while or pay somebody to do it. Like, no, just
do it. Like, I have like 5 videos up with not a lot of people that viewed it, but like, I think if you do it, the more you do it, the more it's going to happen. It's not that it is like, I mean, really, I figured it out. Believe me. But I am not good at social media. I barely do my own, but you know, I love TikTok though.
Oh, I got to get into it. I mean, I have a lot of compliments and followers in the videos that I post, but I'm like, great. I have a TikTok shop. I somehow managed to do that, but
that's impressive. You know,
Is it?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Sure. It sounds about right. But also back to the journaling and tying this into walking and how ridiculously simple this is. I always have my phone on me when I'm walking. I listen to podcasts, of course, but there are times I'll have an idea and I'll voice record it. I have a voice recorder, or I'll take a quick note and just, oh, this is why this isn't working. You know, my SEO tanked. Well, yeah. And then I realized, oh crap, that's why, because I did this. And I'll make a quick note of it, or I'll talk into my voice recorder. Next thing I know, I'm 7 miles from home and I've solved all of the problems.
Right.
But yeah, that is something I definitely write everything down. The silliest stuff, write it down or record it.
So I noticed on your website, you also, you know, in addition to the betting blocker, you answered one of my questions when we booked you for the podcast. I was like, oh, what do you do about horses who want to chew on it? And then I went to your website and I was like, oh, you have something for it. So I think, you know, there are other products that relate to your main product. And, you know, where do you get the ideas from, and how do you say, oh, that's something that I need to put into production?
So I think you're referring to Chew Blocker. So Chew Blocker is a specific proprietary blend of natural ingredients. I actually have a video of me tasting it, and that's for real. That is actual Chew Blocker. It's disgusting. But it's I made it specifically for the nylon bristles. People still use it on wood and other surfaces, which is great, totally fine. But you know, the idea is I made it specifically for that surface. So of course you're always going to have horses that are going to chew and try to pull these things out. They will. If you have a very aggressive chewer, you can pull them out of the bases. Mm-hmm. So I created the Chew Blocker for that reason. And I also have a warranty. So if you buy a Chew Blocker for each betting blocker and your horse pulls that out and the Chew Blocker is ineffective for them, I recognize that. Although I don't think I've had to honor any warranties, maybe one or two over the year. But anyway, if you buy the Chew Blocker and the betting blocker, I will refund or replace your betting blocker for free if your horse pulls it out.
Yeah, that's great. I think, you know, those types of things, you only know once you start getting market feedback on your products of saying, you know, I sold X number of products and a certain percentage of people are telling me their horses are chewing on it. So what can I do about it?
Yeah, it's really not a big issue though, especially if you have a horse that has hay, is, you know, has a stimulating environment. You know, you got these guys that are stall bound and injured. Yeah, they're going to chew on it. You know, and I try to troubleshoot, okay, does your horse have hay? But it's kind of hard to ask because people get real defensive. Of course he has hay. Oh, sorry. You know, does he have toys? Like, what is he? Is he box in a stall? So I try not to start that argument with them. It's like, here's your solution. If you still have an issue, I have a way to resolve it. Yeah. Customer care. I do all my customer care as well. You're going to hear directly from me if you email me.
Oh, that's why. Yeah, I was going to ask that. You handle all the customer care stuff?
I do. I'm a control enthusiast. So
I like that.
Whereas my independent contractors will do packing and shipping and processing of some orders, I need to be the one to answer questions. That's always me. I don't see that changing in the future. Maybe, but it's going to take a whole lot of training for somebody to learn exactly how I talk to my customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely, people have talked about that and how to make people care as much as they do about their business, which is difficult.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I have a lot of great people in my life that care and know how to, you know, be kind, but it's still, you're not running my business.
Right, exactly.
When April and I first talked, she talked about betting blocker, but then you threw out like this totally random, oh, I also have a coffee line. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Like, how did that come about?
That was an accident, actually. I love coffee and I also love to give back. So I created that. It's called Rise and Ride Roast, riseandrideroast.com. My slogan is giddy up and give back. So for every cup of coffee, for every bag of coffee that you buy from my website, I'm only direct to consumer right now. I do not do B2B for my coffee. It is a very hard space to get into. Ooh, it's very saturated. Yeah. It really is. So I make very little profit on this coffee line. I donate a percentage back to nonprofit rescues. So my first one was Brand Manor Sanctuary in right outside of Reading, Pennsylvania. Shout out to them. I got my horse Duncan from them about 3.5 years ago, and they were my first beneficiary for the coffee line. I am admittedly, business people need to admit their struggles. I am horrible at keeping up with socials for that. I'm horrible at marketing for that. Something I need to work on, but it's a great coffee. It's locally sourced. My roaster is about 20 minutes from me. I have 3 flavors and ground or whole bean. It's a fantastic coffee. And the fact that it gives back to nonprofits is really my whole goal.
Mm-hmm.
Can nonprofits apply for that, or you just randomly pick who you want?
Oh, good question. I pretty much randomly pick. I think 3 down the line that I do, but I don't think it's fair for me to say, okay, you have this month. Oh, sorry, sales are really crappy. Here's $2.
Yeah.
So I'll try to keep it till I can get them at least $100. You know, it may take longer, especially with how poorly I'm marketing it right now. But I just don't think it's fair to just give them 1 month and then, you know, be done with it. Each bag, I also handwrite what organization is benefiting for that month with your purchase.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
So at the end of each episode, we ask each guest the same 4 questions. Connor starts with the first.
What is your unfair advantage over others?
I'm a delight. First of all, I'm delightful. Also, there is no other product on the market that I'm aware of, like the bedding blocker. None.
Very cool. What's something worth fighting for, and what is something worth giving up?
So there's always going to be naysayers and think your idea is stupid. Let them. Stop fighting for approval and give up trying to please everyone.
Yeah.
What's been your favorite age so far?
9. I was 9. I didn't have to pay bills. And I was just cleaning stalls for cash. So I would like to go back to 9.
Fair.
Yeah. I think of things like that too.
Yeah. No bills.
No responsibilities.
Yeah.
And who would you recommend as a guest for this podcast?
My first thought was India Wilkinson, Main Street Market. I don't know. I looked back. I didn't see her on any of your previous episodes. She is amazing. She was one of my first people I connected with on LinkedIn. And we're actually doing the Defender 3-day event together. She offered me booth space. So awesome. In Main Street Market and Muckmeister Enterprises. So definitely have India on. She's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, she's one of our friends and always comes to our Wellington event and helps support it. So we love that.
Yeah.
Next year I'll be there. And next year I need to get down there. So I forget what happened this past year, but I'll get there.
Yeah. So save January 18th on your calendar.
Actually, we'll talk about that later, but yes, it is my calendar, but I'll chat with you because I think I'm actually crew chief for my friend's ultra marathon that whole like Thursday to Sunday.
Wow.
One of these days.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for coming in on the podcast and talking with us. It was really fun. Delightful, I might even say.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate
it. That was awesome. Thank you so much. And yeah, looking forward to listening to podcasts while I'm on my walk.
Hey, if you're over the sugar-coated stories and want the real unfiltered side of the horse world, come ride with us.
I'm Maria Falgioni, former jockey turned businesswoman.
And I'm Cheyenne Wimberly, rail racer and rodeo veteran. We're pulling back the curtain on the horse world, the wins, the wild stories, and the things nobody else wants to say out loud.
Serious topics, zero stuffy vibes.
Search Gallop and Gossip wherever you get your podcast and bring your tea because we've got plenty to spill.
I'm excited that we got to have April on the show finally. She and I have been going back and forth since, I don't know, like May of this year, and just have it like connected and gotten the time to make it work. So finally it happened. But I love her product and she is so funny. She
really
makes me laugh.
Yeah, same. I really enjoyed talking to her. You know, a lot of times we do have people who get really candid about themselves and their business, which I find really refreshing. And I hope listeners get a lot out of that. And I think, you know, she was really candid about what she did, how she did it, you know, what she felt was her, you know, her strong points and her weaknesses. And I think that's good to hear a lot of times.
Yeah. And I love the, like, just make it happen kind of attitude, right? Like, trial, error, and roll up your sleeves and do it. And, you know, it sounds like she had help from different sources, but has really embraced doing it herself now and taking it upon herself to figure it out, whether that be her shipping and packing, labeling, to, you know, the social media and mm-hmm. and talking about, like, her marketing and how her business plan sort of is there. And, you know, she had help making that, but going back and revisiting it is, you know, something that she needs to do. And so I appreciate that she shared all that with us.
Yeah. And I also liked that, you know, she said she had a business mentor when she started, which is great. You know, she used a local organization to find someone who wasn't necessarily a horse person, but, you know, could help her with starting the business, which I think anybody can take from that and try and find somebody in their area. We've had a few people that have done that and used a lot of organizations locally that help small businesses and have gotten a lot out of it. So I don't think you necessarily, you know, have to rely within the equine industry, but there are tons of resources available.
Yeah. So I actually was looking this up recently. Some of the community colleges even have, like, for very few dollars, these kind of courses that you can go in and take. Their community outreach programs. And some of them are, like, building a business and having a business plan and where to start that way. So, you know, I think it's anywhere. And if you can get a good solid foundation to get you started, that's helpful. But I also like that she didn't, you know, do tons of market research and validation, because people can ruin things for you. You know, like, it, I know it's important in some respects. I agree with that. But I also think that, you know, sometimes when you have a plan or you have an idea, it's good to get it going. And before you start telling people, because people have things that everybody has something to say about it.
For sure. And I think you shouldn't let people's feedback keep you from starting what you think is a good idea.
Right.
I think, you know, the feedback helps a lot of times. You know, take everything with a grain of salt, write it down, come back to it later and say, does this still apply? Or does this apply now? You know, people can always knock on an idea, but then when they actually see a product or they see how your service is going to work, then they can say, oh, I didn't think of that. You know,
yeah,
this is a good idea.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know what? You can start something, and if it's not exactly working out the way you want, you can always pivot.
Mm.
You know, you can always make some tweaks to it. It might not end up being exactly what you thought in the end when you started, but, you know, things evolve across your business span. So, yeah. And probably the key thing that I think both of us took out of this was her journal. Mm-hmm. About why do I want to quit? I mean, that genius, like, brilliant,
yeah,
brilliant, right?
I really loved that. And I loved, you know, talking about it and how it could help you in a lot of ways. I also loved that she said that she applied and is certified for the Women's Business Enterprise National Council. So, you know, it's something that supports women-owned businesses and has programs and opportunities for business development. So that is a good takeaway as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was great. I loved our conversation. She was super fun.
Yeah. So I think we will be chatting soon about our Equestrian Business Women Networking Brunch in Wellington, Florida on January 18th. So we've got a lot to do to prepare for that.
So we've got to get to work. And you're going to find the links to today's guest in the show notes at www.eqbusinesswomen.com. Equestrian B2B is out twice a month on the 1st and the 15th.
You can find out more at eqbusinesswomen.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Find Equestrian B2B wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review.
Now go start your quitting journal.